supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Welcome to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. As the weather warms up, many people are looking at their lawns and not liking what they're seeing. We got to warn you over and over again that in the north, it's a waste of time and money to try to sow grass seed. But if it's not a big place or you've got it in your budget, sod could be just what you need. We'll tell you all about it after lots of your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Valerie, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Well, thank you, Mike. I have a question. We moved to the city here in Queens Village in Philadelphia, and we have a little garden. And so my daughter bought these red knockout roses, the double kind. And when I prune them now, I realize the stems are really quite dark and spotted. I thought they are disease resistant.
Yes, and what was the second word after disease?
Resistant.
Right, not proof. Knockout is a brand created by a big gardening company. It's a line of roses. And it's done a lot of good for the rose-growing world because given the right conditions, these things are pretty much bulletproof. But you've already told me that you're in South Philly.
Yes.
Where by definition, everything is a little bit more crowded together than people in other areas can even imagine.
Right.
And sun and good soil are hard to come by. So I'll tell you the first thing that a rose wants to be disease-free is morning sun. Morning sun, the first sun of the morning, is much more important to a rose than the total number of hours of sun it gets a day.
Hmm.
What time of day do yours get sun?
Well, they actually have sun all day.
Really? That's excellent.
Yes, they have sun all day because we are right next to 95, and we are facing south and east.
Oh, okay. So you've got an open expanse, and your roses are getting full sun. That's the hardest thing to fix. So let's move on. Are they mulched?
No, right now they're not mulched.
What were they mulched with?
They were mulched with leaf litter.
Oh, okay. Well, that's not terrible. That's not terrible. That's not the ideal for roses, but it's much better than wood. And how long have they been in the ground?
About a year. We just moved here a year ago.
Okay, so they went in last spring.
Yes.
And how did they look last year? How was the leaf color?
Well, they had blossomed, and I thought they were, because the first year was the first year, I assumed that they didn't put out a lot of blossoms, but they had blossoms, and then I noticed the stems were totally dark, spotted.
Right.
Which is not, I didn't think, was normal.
Well, it is normal, unfortunately, but it's not a good sign. Now, did you feed them last year?
Yes, I fed them with rose food.
Okay, so you used a chemical fertilizer.
Right,
That's going to be part of the problem. Does their soil drain well?
Yes, the soil rinses very well. It's kind of sandy.
Excellent, really. Excellent. And when you water them, how do you water them?
I have a watering hose.
Right.
That I connect to my watering outlet and soak the ground thoroughly.
Okay.
I do not water them from above.
Oh, okay, good. You know, there is always the possibility you could have picked up a rose with a virus. These things do happen in the growing fields and in greenhouses. But let's not assume the worst. As you note, this was their first year in the ground.
Yeah.
And last summer was the hottest summer in history.
Exactly.
And you say your roses have full sun exposure. So that means that they got blasted while they were pretty young. So that in itself is going to be stressful. The ideal situation for a rose is morning sun until around 2 or 3 in the afternoon and then some shade. Here's what I want you to do. I want you to go to one of the nice garden centers or to Fairmount Park, where I know they offer compost for free.
Yes.
And I want you to get like a trash can load full of good black compost. And I want you to actually, since there's no mulch underneath them now, I want you to scrape away with a hoe like the top eighth of an inch of soil.
Okay.
And toss that somewhere else. And then mulch the roses 1 inch deep with compost all around, not touching the stem, but covering all the ground around them. When you water them, I would just take everything off the hose and jiggle with the handle till just a drip came out. And when your roses need a drink, let a hose drip at the base of each rose first thing in the morning for like an hour a pop. Just drip, drip, drip. Really saturate the soil. And then if the problem is confined to the stalks, if you once again grow really good leaves and good flowers, this may seem ridiculous, but get out there with an old toothbrush and some baking soda and mix up a paste of baking soda and see if you can scrub that black stuff right off. Let's see how they grow. Oh, and no more chemical fertilizer.
Okay.
Because that's bad. And if we have one of these blistering summers, I know it sounds crazy, but giving them a little break with a beach umbrella or something after 2 or 3 in the afternoon during a heat wave, they would absolutely love that.
All right. Well, that's very nice. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you, Val. Good luck.
Thank you. Bye.
1-888-346-9499. Leaf, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you very much. My neighbor has given me a huge fig bush, about 6 feet tall and 6 or 7 feet around. And it's just starting to bud, and I'm wondering if I can still move that bush successfully.
Okay, now, is your name really Leaf?
It really is.
Is your last name's not
Erickson?
No.
Yeah.
You're Leaf Erickson. There's people who have been looking for you for centuries, man.
Well, it's the same guy, different life.
Okay, good, good. Reincarnation exists. Who knew? And now you've heard it on You Bet Your Garden. Where are you and where is the fig tree?
I'm located in New Bern, North Carolina, which is out on the east coast of the state.
It's a beautiful area.
And the fig bush base is about 2 or 3 feet from the side of my neighbor's house. And he wants to get rid of it. It's encroaching. It's just too big for it where it is.
Okay. Now, do you like the size of it? Are you ready to, accept it in its entirety?
Yes.
Okay, excellent. Figs are really easy to move. They're easy to propagate. There's a lot you can do to figs that would kill other plants. If you want to move the whole schmagaggy and you say it's in the neighborhood, what I would suggest is get a couple of guys, and of course the requisite case of beer, and everybody has a shovel and a tarp. You need a big tarp. So get guys on all sides of the figs, like 4 guys. You can do the 4 stooges banging your shovels into each other. Get those shovels underneath the fig as much as you can so that when the 4 of you lift the plant out of the ground, there's still a lot of soil attached to the roots.
Right, you know, the root ball.
Right. Try to move as much of an island of soil as possible. But because it's a fig, don't worry if you break off a couple of roots or something. That's no big deal. And then put the plant on the tarp, and then you guys carry the tarp so you're not dragging the body across driveways and stuff. Take it to its new location. If you lived near me, I would tell you it needs to be in a sheltered spot. With you in North Carolina, where your summers get very humid, I would say have it out more in the open so it can get good airflow around it. So dig the new hole first. Don't improve the soil in the planting hole. Drop the root ball in. Try to make it the same height or higher than it was in its previous hole. And then tamp the soil down gently. Lay an inch of compost all around it. And then the most important thing, unless it's going to rain for 3 days, is take a hose and mess with the hose until it just drips a little bit, drip, 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 and drop that right at the base of the tree, like 6 inches away from the trunk, and let it drip for like 10 hours. all morning long. Do this like for 3 or 4 days, then back off to every other day. And pretty soon you should see new green growth since it's moved. And then you can water it normally, just deeply once or twice a week. Because I'm presuming you have somewhat sandy soil that doesn't hold moisture as well.
Very sandy.
Yeah, okay. Don't improve the soil in the hole because lots of air pockets around the roots are good. All that drainage and air down there is great for the roots of the tree, but do add maybe even 2 inches of compost to the surface to provide some organic matter, and it'll also be a little barrier up top to keep moisture in the soil. And man, it's your game to lose after that. If any parts of the tree don't look good 2 weeks from now, just prune them off, get a sharp pair of pruners. Otherwise, in your climate, with the right kind of fig, you might get 2 crops a year.
Fantastic. I appreciate your advice. I'll get to work.
All right. Thank you, Leaf. Take care.
Right. Thank you very much. Enjoy the program every week.
Excellent. Thank you, sir.
Bye-bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and deliver 2 messages to everyone who's getting ready for lawn cutting season. 1, get a new blade or have your old blade sharpened before your first cutting. Everything you hear about a dull blade goes double for lawns. And do not plan to bag up or otherwise collect your clippings. Pulverizing them back into the turf is the best way to keep your lawn well fed and your environment safe. But don't go trading in your old clunker for a dedicated mulching mower just yet, because we'll be right back with lots more of your fabulous phone calls and how to correctly install a new outdoor carpet of sod. I'm Sodden Mike McGrath, and this is You Bet Your Garden.
Burpee supports You Bet Your Garden and offers over 80 new varieties for the 2013 growing season, including Super Sauce, a 2-pound sauce tomato, and On Deck, a sweet corn you can grow in a container. These and more can be seen online at burpee.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later, if you have a small space or can fit it into your budget, sod is a great way to have a great-looking lawn this time of year. We'll go into all the details and talk about sodding correctly after lots more of your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Laura, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hello.
Hello. Welcome. And where are you?
I live in the northwest corner of New Jersey near the Delaware Water Gap.
Okay. Very good. Very scenic area out there.
Oh,
What can we do for Laura in New Jersey?
Well, I was listening to your show, I think it was 2 Saturdays ago, and there was somebody who called from Nashville. She had a question about a night-blooming cereus that she had rooted, and she called it a Dutchman's pipe. And I said, that doesn't make sense to me whatsoever.
How would you like to been in my position while she's explaining all this? I'm trying to figure out what kind of plant she's talking about. I'm pretty sure it was neither.
No, it wasn't. But when I got off the turned the radio off, I started thinking about this, and common names can be so confusing. Especially when certain plants have the same common name, and one plant can have four common names. So having worked in greenhouses before and having grown a lot of different house plants before, I have grown a lot of cacti, orchids, as well as epiphytes, meaning, the growing from attached to trees.
Right.
Then I said, oh, I know what she's talking about. And this is not a true cactus. Epiphyllum occipitalum is also called Night Blooming Series and Queen of the Night and Dutchman's Pipe.
Oh, my goodness.
So, I looked it up just to see whether it actually does have the name Dutchman's Pipe. Now, I had one of these plants, and they are incredibly fragrant. They open at night, and they're white. And a lot of these night-blooming plants that are white attract the night pollinators. So I looked again at the picture, and unlike the Dutchman's pipe, which looks like Sherlock Holmes's pipe, this one just has a curved stem that opens up, again, looking like a water lily.
Ah, well, and as we talked about a little bit in that phone call, Dutchman's pipe is like a poster child for Native American plants. It's very common. It survives here. There are varieties that can exist in any climate. Your plant with no name, is it hardy over winter here? Is it a summertime only?
It shouldn't be planted outside. It should be kept in a pot. In well-drained soil. Remember, this grows on bark, on trees.
Right.
So if it has some the smallest size of orchid bark or sand or something, perlite, to keep it well-drained, then it can be kept outside until the temperature goes down to about 40 degrees.
Right, so it's like a lot of these fabulous plants. It needs to be brought in most climates
exactly. In
the winter. But as you're describing it, as an epiphyte, it really does sound like, if not a true orchid, certainly a very good fake orchid, a good first cousin.
I have never, ever seen an orchid that looks like what is called an orchid cactus. I think the only similarity is that most orchids grow from trees as well.
Yes. Now, again, this has no common name that people are going to find it under of its own. So let's give me the scientific name again real slowly.
Okay. So the one that she was talking about, which can root in water, is Epiphyllum oxypetalum.
Okay. Epiphyllum oxypetalum.
Yes.
Okay, that sounds like something Batman figured out from the Riddler.
Yeah.
But it also sounds like a remarkable plant, it has the roots of an orchid and the head of a lily.
Yeah.
Ha! Well, very good. Well, just come sit here, Laura. You can just take my desk, and I'll just go retire somewhere. And
I listen to your show all the time, and I am so happy that you are promoting organic gardening and that you have alternative solutions to pesticides and herbicides, GMOs, because I've been working on those issues for years.
Thank you so much for solving our mystery. This is the part of the show I like the best, where everybody gets involved, especially when it's to bail me out.
Yeah, well, I'm really glad that I could help, and I hope that the woman will be listening to the show so that she can understand what she needs to do.
Excellent. Laura, thank you so much for your help with this.
You're welcome, Mike. It was a pleasure talking with you.
All right. You take care.
Okay. You too. Bye.
1-888-346-9499. Jerry, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thanks, Mike.
Well, thank you, Jerry. How are you, sir?
I'm fine. How are you?
I am doing very well. Where is Jerry a fine person?
In Penn Valley, Pennsylvania.
Okay, just outside of Philly?
Correct.
What can we do for you, Jer?
Well, I'm having a problem with sprouting some canna seeds. I harvested the seeds after the canna plant grew last year.
Right.
Last season, and I had a beautiful canna plant, and I have the rhizome. But I figured I would try and sprout some of the seeds. I put them in water, and after a month, nothing's happened.
That's not how you start any seed, Jer. So that's...
I tried scarifying the seeds so that it would get started, because I understand it's very hard.
Okay.
And I still, and I put it in little potting discs, and it still has not sprouted. I put it in potting soil, and I'm not getting anything.
Well,
and it's been a month.
Oh, well, I mean, what you're doing is highly unusual, first of all. I've not heard of anybody trying to grow cannas from seed. But I'm very familiar with the plants. A good friend of mine developed not only the flower carpet brand of roses, but a line of cannas, my favorite of which was Tropicana. And I learned a little bit about the plants from this Australian guy. And it's my understanding that, first of all the cannas, all the canna lilies in cultivation today are hybrids. And for those people who don't know what we're talking about, canna lilies are very tropical plants, very dramatic, large, colorful tropical leaves. And when they get a lot of sun, a brilliant clump of flowers appears at the top of these leaves. But people who have shade will grow canna lilies just for the remarkable color of the leaves. They're very dramatic plants. They're very tropical.
So yes, beautiful.
So right away, I'll tell you that if the seeds are viable, they are the seeds of hybrid plants, which means that they would not come true. You would not get the same canna from them.
Okay.
Nobody knows really what you would get. There is no technique of just sitting a seed in water. If you think about nature, nothing happens that way. Now, these are tropical plants, so it is unlikely that they need what's called a cold treatment. Some difficult to sprout seeds need to be put in the refrigerator or the freezer for a certain amount of time to simulate being trapped under the ground under winter. Some seeds need to be exposed to smoke because they only germinate after a forest fire. And as you point out, some seeds need to have their coating kind of scraped off with a file a little bit, scarred up. If it is a hard seed, it may need that scraping. That's well beyond me. But if you were to give me a packet of canna seeds and bet me $100 I could not grow a plant from one, what I would do is I would take those seeds, I would leave half of them alone, I might file down a little bit on half of them, but then I would put them in regular garden six-packs like we get our tomatoes from in the summertime, filled with a very light, loose, soil-free mix, and I would saturate that mix well with water. And then I would set them on a professional heating mat set for as high a temperature as it could go, probably somewhere between 75 and 80 degrees, knowing that if the seeds of a canna hit the ground in the tropics and do germinate, they're going to require a very high soil temperature for good germination. And of course, you understand the typical way to get more plants from a canna is after you've grown it for a few years to break up the root and plant individual parts of the root system. That's the classic way of propagating canna lilies.
Right. Well, that I figure I'll try with some of the rhizome, which became very, very large.
Every little piece of the rhizome that has an eye and some good root hairs on it should grow into a plant. The plants may be a little small the first year, but beginning the second year, these things take on so much biomass so quickly, you should have full-size plants again.
Well, that's good.
That's the smart
money. All right. I will certainly try a heating pad and see what that does.
All right, Jer?
Thank you very much, Mike.
If you get germination, send us a picture.
I'll be happy to do that.
1-888-346-9499. Dean, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hello, Mike. I'm calling you from Atlanta. I learned about you on our local garden show as the guru of this subject from Walter Reeves. He hosts our show here.
Well, you'll have to thank Walter in Hotlanta for me.
I will do so.
All right.
What I'm wanting to know is the new treated lumbers,
right?
The new copper chemicals used for treating the new, the new age, if you will, pine lumber to make it rot proof. Is it okay to use either in raised beds or herb boxes?
Well, you know, everything is all a balance of risk and benefit and things like that. There are a huge number of different treated woods out there. And believe it or not, some treated woods are still allowed to be made with arsenic. Woods that are in contact with, like, ocean water, salty, you know, things.
Right,
you know,
piles and so forth. Yeah.
Right, which would seem to me the place you'd want to keep the arsenic away from the most. But
duh,
what do I know? And then there's all these other things that have been using. The original treated wood was copper, chromium, and arsenic. And, of course, people were worried about the arsenic the most. I had experts telling me that the chromium, the heavy metal, was more worrisome to some industrial chemists who had worked with those kind of materials. And I'm just going to be perfectly honest. I just don't trust these people. I mean, you know, why do you think they called it pressure-treated wood? Because they wanted to create this image of, like, they're petrifying wood. They're baking it in ovens, or they're having Superman and the Hulk press down hard on it to compress it so it'll never rot. And actually, the pressure was that they could, like, shoot pounds and pounds of arsenic into every little piece of cheap pine. So I would have to, like, investigate each piece and all its components and all that it was made of. And I will tell you that, to me, there are just so many fabulous alternatives out there that I wouldn't go near that stuff.
Yeah, what would be good for the new one, for something that you would recommend then, let's say? Because the newer copper compounds supposedly do not have the chromium or the arsenic in them, but they still have copper.
Right, and copper in small amounts is good, but copper in large amounts is bad. My raised beds, first of all, are almost all made out of fieldstone because there were a lot of rocks in the area where I started my garden. And for once, I was smart. And instead of hauling the rocks away and then bringing in wood, I turned the rocks on their side to make raised bed gardens and found out after the fact that I was imitating something J.I. Rodale had done back in the 40s, deliberately using stone. Now, you're down in Atlanta where you have a nice warm climate, but here in the north, it is great to make your raised beds out of some form of stone because the stone heats up during the day and then radiates that back at night. So it gains us some time at the beginning and end of the season, which is why when I talk to people, quote, locally, you know, in New England and Delaware, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, New York, I urge them to either use fieldstone or pavers. Pavers are great because you can assemble any size and shape bed you want. You can make it as high as you want. And then if you change your mind later on, they're like Legos. You can just take it apart and use it to make a driveway or build something else. But I will also tell you that when I started my garden years and years ago, there was a brand new product on the market that I wanted to test as I was building my first raised beds, and it was called Trex.
And right, I'm familiar.
It is. Everybody knows what Trex is now. It's the chosen child for a deck building these days.
Right.
It is a great material. It's recycled sawdust from wood mills and recycled plastic, I believe, from the supermarket plastic bag bins. And it's formed into these long pieces that look like landscape timbers. I built this garden in the mid-'80s, and my Trex looks like it went in last year. price-wise, I think it's comparable. And it seems to be from Krypton, man. I can't tell you how many of these old pressure-treated garden beds I've seen that after 15 years, no matter what was in them, they're falling apart and they're full of termites and carpenter ants. And as we get down to the south where you are, I like to avoid wood, period. I think your best choices are some sort of stone material, some sort of composite material, or if you're just building raised beds for vegetable gardens, take a look at the French intensive method, which just uses mounds. They don't frame the sides at all. And then they plant little stuff, little flowers and little herbs and little lettuces on the sides. And not only is it very stable, but they get 20% more growing space.
Oh, that's great. Okay, well, that's helpful. I appreciate that very much.
Thank you
again.
All right, you'll have to thank our friend down there for saying nice things about us.
I shall do so. I wouldn't have learned about you had it not been for him.
All right, well, give him our best, man.
I shall. Thanks.
Thank you, Dean. Well, it's time for me to take a little break and warn those who'd like to see me in person that I'll appear at the Radnor Memorial Library in Wayne, PA, this Wednesday, April 3rd at 6:30. At the Delaware Home Show in Dover, this Saturday and Sunday, April 6th and 7th. At the Fishing Creek Herb Guild in Bloomsburg, PA, on Thursday, April 18th. And at the Community Home Show in Ocean Pines, Maryland, on Saturday, April 27th. But don't go looking for all the details at the events section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back with a couple more of your fascinating phone calls and how to turn that ragged turf of yours into an instant lawn. I'm Mike McGrath, and this is You Bet Your Garden.
Burpee supports You Bet Your Garden and offers over 80 new varieties for the 2013 growing season, including Super Sauce, a 2-pound sauce tomato, and On Deck, a sweet corn you can grow in a container. These and more can be seen online at burpee.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up in just a little bit, grass seed does not work when sown on cold soil in the north in the spring. And most people don't just want to cut what's out there and wait till the fall. Well, you do have the option of laying sod. It's a little expensive, but it is an instant lawn and it works great in the spring. We'll tell you all about it after a couple more of your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Kelly, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thanks, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing great, Kelly. How are you?
I'm fine. I'm in northern Michigan, so I'm a little cold and covered with snow.
Oh, yeah. Well, northern Michigan. But you get like 2.5 weeks of summer, don't you? Maybe like 18 days, you know?
A couple of years ago, somebody said we were really lucky that summer fell on a weekend last year.
So everybody could enjoy it. That's great. Well, I know for a fact that you guys up there are very dedicated gardeners. It seems the colder the climate and the shorter the season, the more people really enjoy their gardening. So you guys are the epic gardeners, the Olympic gardeners. What can we do for you, Kel?
Well, I have always been a composter, more just because I don't like making garbage. So I've never really paid a whole lot of attention to what I threw in the bin, other than I knew the protein, you know, stuff couldn't go in it. But I got chickens last year, and I was told by a friend that I should start throwing the chicken poop in the compost bin. And I was absolutely shocked at the end of the summer when I realized that the stuff I had made during the summer was almost as nice as the professionally made stuff that I had been buying. And it got me thinking, maybe I should pay more attention to what I'm putting in.
If you're filling these bins with lots of garbage, that's why it doesn't look as good as the composted chicken manure. It really only is the dry brown material you start with, the shredded fall leaves, especially
well,
in your
yeah,
area.
I always put leaves in, and I have coffee grounds.
Good, good.
I don't have a shredder that's on my list, but eventually I'll be able to afford one. And then I have eggshells that I grind up, and a lot of the veggie scraps I give to the
chickens now. Yeah, that's great.
But there are some. And then there's a little bit of pine shavings that are stuck to the chicken poop. But I also have a wood stove, so I have wood ash that I can. But from what I've heard you say, you shouldn't put a whole much of that in. And then I have a friend who has horses, and she said if I wanted any of her horse manure, I could get that to put it in. But I'm just afraid that I'm going to mess up the stew.
Okay, so here's the deal.
Put the right stuff in.
Here's the deal. No wood ash at all. The only thing wood ash is good for is if you get a soil test done and your soil is too acidic and they tell you to use lime to raise the pH, you use your wood ash instead. You don't add wood ash to a compost pile because compost piles take in raw materials. Wood ash is already finished. It's an end product, and it's highly alkaline. You really must shred the leaves because, as you see, the leaves mat down. They get all wet. They get all sticky, especially in your cold climate. They don't decompose very well. They will decompose much better if you can shred them. Now, your chicken manure and the pine shavings mixed in with a whole bunch of fall leaves, that's incredibly perfect. That's going to make you compost, and it's going to happen faster for you than it has in the past because the chicken manure is hot. It has a lot of nitrogen. So mixing that in with the pine shavings and the shredded leaves, that nitrogen is going to feed the microbes that will change that carbon into fabulous compost. A horse manure is weedy. It has to be completely composted. It has issues with it. You have your chickens there. You have a closed cycle. I would keep giving all of your garbage to the chickens. That's the best place for it. No, it doesn't help in the pile. It really doesn't help. The kitchen garbage in there mostly just slows the process down. You need an enormous number of well-shredded leaves for kitchen waste not to slow things down. And again, in your climate, you have to provide your own heat. Nature don't give you much heat, as you've noticed.
Yeah.
So that's what the chicken manure is going to do. That's absolutely perfect. You are not going to believe the quality of compost you make, and you're going to make it quicker than you imagined possible.
That'll simplify things huge for me.
And simple works best in gardening.
It sure does. Thank you so much.
My pleasure, Kelly. Good luck.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Christopher, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike.
Hello, Chris. How are you?
Very well, thank you, and I really appreciate you taking my call.
Well, we appreciate you making it. Where are you, man?
I'm in Greenfield, Massachusetts.
And you know I'm going to ask you where that is.
I'm on the border of Vermont and New Hampshire.
Oh, okay. Excellent. Excellent. What can we do for you, sir?
Mike, I have this ongoing problem with an infestation of fleas in my yard. At first, I thought it was just my pet getting them.
Right.
However, I put the pet on K9 Advantix 2, and we were still getting fleas. And I noticed that it was not just the dog getting the fleas. We were getting them on our clothes as we were going outside. As we're coming in, we'd have to actually pick them off of our clothes to get in the house.
This is not uncommon. And it's, of course, it's not your fault. And you know what? It's inevitable if you have pets that sooner or later you're going to wake up to an infestation of ankle biters in your house. And
it's
very frustrating. I've been through it a couple of times, so I know what works and what doesn't. And the best solutions are all non-toxic and very effective. Now, do you have any ankle biters in your home right now?
No.
Excellent. This is the best time. I want you to go out and get some flea traps. These are really simple things. They are electric fixtures that plug into the wall. They have a little nightlight size bulb in their head. And then underneath is a place to hold a piece of sticky paper. So what you do is in the areas where your pets spend a lot of time, you put one of these flea traps, and you just make sure that when you go to bed at night, all the other lights are off, and there's this just one little light on the floor with a sticky paper underneath. They're very easy to find. They're tremendously effective. In the morning, any fleas that are in that room will have thrown themselves to their death on the sticky paper. Very often, you can end an infestation before you get bitten, because you've got the traps open and ready for business when the first fleas come in. Now, you say you are already treating your pets with one of the spot-on things, and this is one of the real ones you get from your vet, right?
Yes, it is. The other problem I'm having is we're carrying them in the house on our person because they jump on us.
Right. What people don't realize is fleas are lawn pests, whereby ticks are not. Fleas love to live right at the surface of a lawn and breed there. And this was news to me until I started to learn about beneficial nematodes. Now, I don't know if you've heard me talk or other people talk. Beneficial nematodes are these amazing beneficial creatures. They're not insects. They're microscopic worm-like organisms. And they're so small that if you think of a little scrubby pad you would use on your pots and pans, like 100 million of them would come in a container that size. And so you get like a sealed piece of aluminum foil with like a little sponge inside, and it's filled with these beneficial nematodes. And when the soil temperature reaches a certain point, because they need it, you wet your lawn down. And then when the sun goes down, you simply put this sponge into a watering can or something and water your lawn with it. You wouldn't do it early in the morning because they don't like being exposed to light. And you wouldn't put them on a dry lawn because they need moistness to get below the soil surface. But these beneficial nematodes will attack flea larvae right at the surface of the soil and destroy them. And the nematodes will survive in your soil and breed in your soil all spring and summer long. It's much more effective than spraying pesticides. And beneficial nematodes have been bred to have specialty, so there is a variety of this creature that's especially good at staying in the level where these fleas are breeding. So there's even a dedicated beneficial nematode. So search online, look at beneficial nematodes and fleas, but they're tremendously valuable to break up an infestation like this. All right, man?
I just want to thank you so very, very much for your help. And I'm an avid listener of your show. I appreciate it.
All right, Chris. Good luck, man.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. All right, it's time for the question of the week. Sod. It may be pricey, but you get an instant lawn. Alexis Landis, You Bet Your Garden producer, please read this week's timely question.
Thanks, Mike. We heard from Kay in Bala Cynwyd, PA, who writes, I heard you recently warn that putting down grass seed in the spring is a waste of time and money. We desperately need to regrade our lawn due to pooling and the hazard the yard poses to children, tripping and such. We have room in our budget to use sod. I realize we will need to water it carefully and consistently. Is there any more specific advice you can give? Are there different kinds of sod? Thanks very much.
Well, thank you, Kay. This is a great time of year to remind people that grass seed rarely to never yields good results when sown in the spring. The soil is much too cold for speedy germination, giving warm season weeds like crabgrass lots of time to take over, and then reign supreme when summer heat arrives. The best time to sow cool season grasses like fescue or bluegrass is mid-August through the end of September. The soil temperature is perfect for fast germination, and the progressively cooling weather allows the young grass to outcompete those now weakening summer weeds. Ah, but spring is a perfect time for laying sod. Because the grass is already germinated, the cold soil isn't an issue. And cool season grasses love growing in the mild temperatures of spring. Just be sure to get the site prepared and the sod down as early in the season as possible so that your new lawn is well established before summer heat arrives. Now, I'm only talking about cool season grasses here, fescues, rye, and bluegrass. If you live in an area where a warm season grass is the better choice, spring's the best time for everything. You warm climb growers can establish a new lawn as soon as the soil is warm enough to germinate seed or accept sprigs, plugs, or sod. But you folks would wait rather than rush the season, as your grasses, Bermuda, Zoysia, St. Augustine, and Centipede, get stronger as the weather gets hotter. North or south, sod is going to be a lot more expensive than seed. But if you can afford it, it provides an instant lawn that, if well managed, should never see a weed. Now, in the Mid-Atlantic region, you'll generally find two kinds of sod for sale, Kentucky bluegrass and turf-type tall fescue. Bluegrass thrives in sun, and because it's a creeping grass, can fill in its own bare spots. But it does tend to require more food, water, and cutting. Fescue is more tolerant of shade and requires less food and work, but it is a clumping grass that will not fill in its own bare spots. So it is essential that you find matching seed that will be available for future overseeding and repairs. Iowa State University turfgrass professor Nick Christians has some very important tips to offer concerning installation. The first is about freshness. Nick stresses that you want to have the soil surface completely prepared before the rolls of sod are delivered to your property. Sod that's packed for transport can't sit around in hot sunny weather for more than a day before it starts to turn brown. You'll have more wiggle room if the weather is cool and cloudy, but if it's going to sit for any length of time, Nick still suggests rolling the sod out temporarily in a shady spot. And I would personally want to inspect that shipment before it arrives, and be picky. If either bluegrass or fescue can work in your situation, choose by the condition of the sod. Now, our listener who asked this thoughtful question is already going to have the area regraded, which is great. But if the drainage is still sucky, go the extra mile and install drain tiles. All grass needs good drainage. Now, Nick adds that you also want to think about the height of the surface. When you seed a lawn, you typically add good soil or compost, but when you sod, you need to remove some soil because the turf already has considerable height of its own. The finished grade before the sod is laid, says Nick, should be about an inch lower than that for a seeded lawn, or about 1.5 inches below nearby hard surfaces. Now, sod is heavy to begin with, and bigger rolls are enormously heavy. Ah, but they're also going to provide the best coverage with the fewest possible gaps. So consider having a professional do this job. They have the equipment, muscle, and manpower, and experience to get it done right. If it's a small job that you're going to attempt yourself, rough up the soil surface so the roots can get down there easily, and make sure that surface is level. Whether you start with seed, sod, sprigs, or plugs, a level surface is essential to achieving a good-looking lawn. Lay the sod in a staggered pattern, like brickwork, explains Nick, and don't try to stretch pieces out to make things fit. Press those pieces tight against each other, or you'll create gaps. After it's down, roll it lightly to ensure good soil contact with the roots, and then water it deeply to a depth of 4 to 6 inches. Don't overwater after that, and, quote, keep off the grass until new growth begins, which should only take about 10 to 14 days. Well, that sure was some good information on achieving an instant lawn now, wasn't it? Luckily for you, the question of the week appears in print at the Gardens Alive website, where you can read it over with links to lots more information about lawn care. To get started, just click the link at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Yikes, my producer is threatening to leave me rolled up in the sun if I don't get out of this studio. We must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 1-888-346-9499 or send us your email, your tired, your poor, your wretched refuse teeming towards our garden short at garden@whyy.org. We need to know where you live. We love it when you put the actual subject in the subject line. And perhaps you should check Voiced to see if the information you seek is already waiting for you on our website, youbetyourgarden.org, where you can click through to the question of the week. Find the solution to hundreds of garden problems in our Garden Answers A to Z section. Listen to this show, listen to old shows, download this week's podcast, and follow us on Facebook. Elizabeth Perez-Lunes, executive producer of audio content for WHYY. Ken Queter plays our theme song. Our engineer this week is Kevin the Love Train Griffin. Our social media director is Amanda McGrath. Check out her fine work at the You Bet Your Garden Facebook page. Our esteemed editor is Al Banks. Alexis Landis produces You Bet Your Garden for WHYY-FM in Philadelphia. We had desperately needed help this week from the gracious Corrine Hatton. Thank you, Corrine. I'm relatively helpless Mike McGrath, but I'll try to get it together in time to see you again next week. Do you look at orchids with a mixture of desire and dread? I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden, we'll take the fear out of growing nature's most exotic entities, plus your fabulous phone calls.